Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And Overnight America continues for a little bit longer. We got an hour here. And because of that, and also because it's Memorial Day weekend, I wanted to replay a couple interviews we had. And we aired them so late on Thursday night, I thought, you know what, let's give it a second try. And Sunday night audience is normally different than a Thursday night, so we're going to replay our interview with the co-host of Fox and Friends Weekends, author of the book called American Crusade. His name is Pete Hegseth. I thought that was a good interview. We're going to do that. Also, our friend Brad Young from Hairstyle Fisher & Young. We talk about the Supreme Court blocking those materials from the grand jury. The Democrats were requesting that. Also, a judge blocking St. Louis Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner's money going out to these private firms. So what's that all about? We'll have Brad Young explain that coming up in just a moment, too. And, of course, Kevin Kline's whole nother story. I'm a big fan of that. I wanted to go back again to these Joe Biden comments. And let me just I'll fast forward to the end of these comments. And I want you to hear them again just in case you missed them. It was the big thing on Friday. But, hey, maybe you did miss them because, as it turns out, the networks weren't necessarily spending a lot of time on it this weekend. Believe it or not, tell me if you're shocked by this. But CNN, it took them 12 hours before they even mentioned it. 12 hours! By the way, Fox News and MSNBC both reported this little incident of Joe Biden's when he said this. Oh, let me press play here.
Well, you know, thanks so much. That's really our time. I apologize.
You can't do that to black media.
I can't do that to white media and black media because my wife has to go on at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Listen, you got to come see us when you come to New York, VP Biden.
I will.
It's a long way until November. We got more questions.
You got more questions. But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
All right, that is Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee for president. Now, keep in mind, MSNBC and Fox News both reported this throughout the day on Friday. PBS dedicated 2.5 minutes, just a pretty small amount of time to it. NPR dedicated a 5-minute segment where they talked about the campaign and actually had some other experts, quote-unquote experts, on to discuss this. ABC and CBS, let's see, what did they do? Balance the gaffe with bad news for Trump. So they had to counteract it by trying to, you know, throw something negative at Trump. They couldn't just report the Biden thing. They said, well, how could we use this as an opportunity to try to get Trump? So we'll take Joe Biden's comments and we'll use this as an opportunity. What else was it? Between the three evening newscasts, the ABC, CBS, and NBC, who have the nightly news, there was 187 seconds of coverage, or about a minute each. So they at least covered it, but not really. You would think this is something that they would want to cover. You would think this is something that most people would be interested in hearing. A lot of people over the weekend were talking about it and sharing the video. But I think this goes back to the mindset that you find in the way that the Democratic Party treats the, it's an automatic vote. It's a, we're going to use this as a, hey, we are the party for a certain race or whatever, as opposed to the ideology you're trying to talk to someone about ideas. It's the, well, you have to, and you're maybe ostracized if you don't, right? And that's the whole Joe Biden way of thinking. And I got to say, it's pretty insulting to say that your beliefs can be worn by your outside appearance, as in your ideas, your intellectual ideas can all be summed up based on the color of your skin, is extremely insulting. And I think a lot of people realize that, even as you find the one talk show host, or at least the radio show host that was interviewing Joe Biden there, even afterwards came out and said, no, this isn't good. And by the way, on Thursday, we had a guest on, Dr. Winnie Hartstrong. I believe she's running for the first congressional seat here in Missouri. It's here in St. Louis. That's the Lacey Clay seat. She's a Republican. Of course, there's still the nomination, so she's got an opposing Republican. But still, she hopes to go up against Lacey Clay for that congressional seat. And I asked her about that on Thursday night. It was almost like I knew that this would be coming, because she is a African-American as a Republican running also as a supporter of Donald Trump. And I want you to hear this question I asked her and tell me if this doesn't just play into the mindset of what you see people that would normally look at her and profile her. One of the things that you mentioned is that you are a black conservative. And this is what I see sometimes. Sometimes when there is a political discussion and someone comes forward that's on the right, somehow race is always injected into it. And sometimes it's almost like they try to discount your thoughts and ideas because you don't fit the profile of what they think you should fit. And this is the type of impression I've seen online, but I wanted to get it firsthand from you. Do you feel like that is something that happens? All right, so that was the question I asked her on Thursday night. She answered it. You can go back and listen to it on the podcast. If you go to KMOX.com/ONA, this was with Dr. Winnie Hartstrong. But this is what I see. And to me, this is mainstream liberal think, that how could you in your right mind have this color skin and think opposite of what I think, or this or that? And this is dangerous and insulting, and I think a lot of people hopefully recognize it. But the problem now that Joe Biden has is that he's exposed it as what is more mainstream think for his party. And maybe they'll start rejecting this whole idea that you're not allowed to have independent thoughts. Maybe that you start to talk to people and give them the opportunity to have these discussions and be able to express their ideas where it doesn't have to be connected to the color of your skin. And here we are today. And those on the left would want to point fingers and say, oh, hey, because you voted for Donald Trump, you're a racist. Listen to them. This is so ridiculous and dumb. I thought that was worth replaying. All right, so coming up, a couple of different interviews from this past Thursday. Pete Hegseth, co-host of Fox and Friends Weekends, author of a new book called American Crusade. He's coming up next on Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now is a contributor to Fox News, also co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend, and a new book getting some great reviews online, American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. Pete Hegseth, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Ryan, thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is neat. I go online and I look at the rave reviews. You're doing well. The book is out now. And I got to imagine you wrote this in a non-COVID-19 world. I'm wondering if any of your perspectives have changed since then.
Only been fortified. You know, I did. I turned the manuscript. I think there's one mention of coronavirus in there, which I added at the very end, right as this was at the beginning in the context of China. Otherwise, totally outside of this context. And the title of the book is American Crusade, but the subtitles become more important, Our Fight to Stay Free. I mean, here we are. And the idea of American Crusade is it's a holy war for the righteous cause of human freedom. And why do I say holy war? Because you have to know where our rights came from. And of course, our founders wrote them down in the Declaration. Our rights are endowed by God, not by government or a governor, which is what we're learning right now. Governors don't get to choose which rights you get to exercise in the First Amendment or the Second Amendment, yet we're seeing people who are more or less apolitical, but just business owners and want to be open, starting to rebel against this. So it's been an education moment for people. And here we are with the summer coming, with Father's Day coming, and I hope people take a look at American Crusade, because listen, I don't pull any punches. It's unvarnished. It's honest. It's where I was politically, how I've changed, where the left is today, in light of how they resist Donald Trump and what we need to do to, you know, crusade to come alongside him and save our country.
Yeah, and you're right about that, too. You talk about the government, but you also look at the landscape of news media on some of the networks, and you have certain people that would advocate for freedoms, advocate for the protections that are held in the Constitution, those that are given by God. And then there's some that advocate that, no, we know what's better for you. we can tell you how to better manage your life. You need to listen to us. And it's a scary thing that I think a lot of people are waking up to.
It's true. I mean, it's kind of that one size fits all lens that leftists generally have. Because their view, they're generally, it's run by elites from ivory towers. I've spent time in colleges with these people who are generally condescending to regular folks, to deplorables, to forgotten men and women. And from that view, they say, we know better than you. We're smarter than you. So here are the solutions. And they're one size fits all. That's one view of the world from the left. The other view, which I believe is our founding view, which is a freedom view, is the only one size fits all that fits you is you. Is your choices and your world and your business and your risk tolerance and the choices you want to make. So in this moment, yes, leaders can give us guidelines, and they did, and we're happy to be responsible to help slow the spread. Those first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, got it. Make sure the hospital isn't overflooded. But then from there, we can all make choices about our own health, our own medical background, our own age, our own risk tolerance to decide if we're willing to go out or reopen our business. But the one size fits all mentality says, no, you're shut. You're shut down because you're not essential, or you're essential from on high, without any understanding of what people are actually facing. And the president has said it for months now, the cure can't be worse than the virus. And we're starting to reach where I'd say we're past that territory.
Yeah. And that was something that Mike Rowe mentioned in one of his commentaries, the whole idea that there's, well, 30, almost 40 million people that have either lost or furloughed jobs, and they're being told they're non-essential. What does that talk about to the mentality of how people look at work in general and those trying to keep things closed down? Joining us now is the author of American Crusade. By the way, on Amazon, number one bestseller in the government category, Pete Hegseth joining us. And I wanted to read one of the reviews on Amazon to get your reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
The review is very negative, bitter, insulting, and offensive book. Well written, but so what?
Hey, at least they're honest. I mean, listen, I'm really blunt about the left. And if he's a liberal, he's not going to like the book. But he at least knows I'm being honest. And thank you for the well-written comment. I will take that. Usually they say, and it's poorly written. I did pour myself in to try to make the arguments clear, to make the book interesting. And you know, part of the reason he's not going to like it is a lot of people write books that say, okay, here's how we can come together, and here's what we can agree on, and here are the common threads. And this book is, listen, if you're a leftist, you've already decided that you're anti-American because your views are antithetical to the founding principles of our country. And so our job as freedom lovers and patriots is to defeat you, is to win in the political realm, in the cultural realm, in the educational realm, because our ideas are better. So sometimes there isn't room for compromise, and that's one of the points that I make in the book. So he probably doesn't like that part of it, but you know, deep down somewhere, I bet he read something that's got him thinking a little bit.
Good. And I saw online, this was a recent headline on Fox News, and it mentioned that you were almost a never Trumper. So when you go back to 2016, 2015, I remember what that was like. I supported Ted Cruz. I really wanted to see him become the nominee, and it got really heated there for a while. It made it sound like the only way Ted Cruz could find himself on a path to become the candidate is that you had to reject Donald Trump, as opposed to finding some of those common things. And I was wondering what your path was like to become almost a never Trumper.
Yeah, that is chapter two. Yeah. I mean, the first line of chapter two in my book is, hi, my name is Pete Hegseth, and I was almost a never Trumper. And I tell my story because I think it's just reflective of how so many people felt. Like you, I wanted the silver-tongued conservative to just crush the Obama years and quote de Tocqueville and Bill Buckley and, you know, the Federalist Papers and Ronald Reagan and just steamroll into the White House. And instead, Donald Trump showed up and he sort of blew up the whole game, but for all the right reasons. And it took a lot of us a while to figure it out. Listen, my wife saw it right away. She was Trump from the beginning. It took me time to get there. And through this chapter, I write about that change in mindset, which is, I wrote a book 4 years ago, which is similar to this book, but much more tepid. And I think this book is a reflection of what Donald Trump has taught us, to grow a Trump spine, to see something and say something. And that conversion, I talk about my Trump conversion moments, were about how far the left has gone, the stakes of our country, that this is about, this is not about left versus right. This is, do you love America or not? Do you believe in borders or not? Do you believe in socialism or capitalism? Are you a globalist or an America first person? It's basic core principles. That's what Trump showed us. So yeah, it's a confession that I wish I didn't have to make, but thankfully I never crossed that Rubicon. And instead, like the, you know, converts are mostly the most, are usually the most zealous ones because they know why they came to it. I'd count myself as one of those.
You know, one of the very start when they start to send the emails out and saying, oh, we have Pete Hegseth available to do interviews. They say you're an old school patriot. I was hoping you can define what an old school patriot is.
Well, I think an old school patriot is one who looks back at what built this country and appreciates it and doesn't fall for the latest whims or the latest trends of I mean, what's cool and what's easy to do, right? So it's gritty citizenship. It's toughness. It's encouraging men to be men and women to be women. It's, you know, it's politically incorrect in the current view, but entirely grounded in the constitutional and the declaration view of America. So you old school in that, listen, I think we should have civics. I think we should teach English and have English as an official language. I think we should put God back in our schools and be unafraid that there's no separation. There's no freedom from religion. It's freedom of religion. I think values are important. So it's kind of old school in the sense that all this new crap that the elites are ramming down our throat, and then they're still saying, oh, but we love America. It's like, no, you've rejected it. And there's some old school ways to get back to it. And I kind of take that and break it down to remind people who, through political correctness, we all fall into it every once in a while. Oh, I can't say that anymore. Oh, man, I guess we've moved past that. Or, you know, I guess just to be nice, I'll do this. Or I don't want to get in trouble, so I won't say this. And I think Trump has created the space for us to reject this prison of political correctness and instead just speak our minds. And the left's going to call you names. Man, they call me names. They call you names. All of us names. But that's because we're close to the target and they don't have anything to defend.
Yeah. You know, people look to be offended. They really are disappointed when someone has a free thought. The expression and the ability to express yourself through ideas and have conversations is something that gets lost a lot of times on the left. Not for everyone, and there are people I really disagree with, but, you know, you can look at some that you could say 95% of the time I disagree, but at least Bill Maher will say something and stand up for freedoms and be able to expand up for free expression and call out those that are trying to squash that. I'm curious, do you ever make it to the Midwest?
I'm from Minnesota originally.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I born and raised. I'm in the Midwest all the time because Fox and Friends sends me out to do these diner segments in the morning. Listen, it's where I'm from. It's, I think, where the common sense wisdom emanates from. So I love the Midwest.
I think it's great. And I know you can't pick what's on your Wikipedia page, but the photo is great with the giant government, big government sucks sticker. That's a very appropriate.
Yeah, of all the pictures they could have put up of me, I'll take that one.
That is a good one. Now, the book is doing really well. Like I mentioned, number one in the government section right now on Amazon.com. And if people wanted to check out the book, check you out, where can they go?
Yeah, anywhere books are sold. There is a backlog on the book right now at Amazon. It's temporarily out of stock, but you can order it and it'll get out just like a lot of the things we're ordering these days on Amazon. But you can go to Barnes & Noble. There's still in stock editions. You can go to Premier Collectibles, which has signed versions. And then you can also go to FoxNation.com, which is something I'm involved with at Fox. And if you get a year subscription to Fox Nation, which is a great deal and a really cool streaming service, you get a signed copy of my book as well. So there's a bunch of places you can still get it.
Oh, that's cool. Did you voice your own audiobook?
I did, yes.
That's cool.
So that was fun. It was two long days in an audio booth, but you rediscover your book. You know, you wrote it months and months before, and now you're involved in trying to get it launched, and then you get a chance to read it again, and it reintroduces you. It's fun.
I don't know if it's like that for you, but I could do, you know, I do five shows a week. And if someone were to say, hey, what did you talk about 3 nights ago? I couldn't tell them. I just completely. So being able to go back, read your book over again and put all of that different work into voice and express it that way, that's got to be pretty awesome.
It is that you just said it correct. You said it perfectly. Whoa, I forgot I did that. Oh, thank goodness I included that. And I kind of highlighted it as I went so I could think about the things I wanted to emphasize when I was promoting it, when it came out to launch. So yeah, it's nice when you reread it and you're not ashamed.
Oh,
that's always
so cool.
A bonus. Yes.
Fox and Friends, co-host on the weekends, also contributor. You get around, you travel, you can find the book online on Amazon. You can go to his website. Pete Hegseth, thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed our time here tonight.
Thank you. Likewise. My pleasure.
And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line on Overnight America, KMOX. We like to bring Brad Young from Harris Dahl Fisher & Young on the show every once in a while when there's some legal matters to discuss, and a few of them, some local, some national. Brad, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure, Ryan. Good evening, sir.
Let's start with the local story, and there's a headline here that a judge has now blocked the circuit attorney Kim Gardner from paying outside law firms. There was some question if she would be able to use public funds for her defense, and we know that there are still things that she is defending. I want to know your thoughts on this. Is it the right move by the judge? Is it a shocking move by the judge? Just in general, what do you think about it?
Well, I think it is the right move. And of course, the granting of a temporary restraining order means that the judge has some degree of certainty that the plaintiff will prevail. In this case, the plaintiff is a taxpayer. His name is Charles Lane. And he was suing because the circuit attorney's office has been spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on outside attorneys. Now, you know, I always like to make the joke. I always appreciate it when lawyers get paid. Okay. And so I'll get the joke out of the way. But the bottom line is that there's really no basis for the circuit attorney's office to hire all of these outside attorneys. She's got practically a law firm going on here with all the outside attorneys that she's been hiring over the years, and there's no budget for that. The city hasn't allocated funds for that. She's signed contracts, and these contracts involve her being represented personally in addition to professionally. So, of course, that violates state law. So there's been a lot of legal issues. It's taken a year for the judge to rule on this for the temporary restraining order, and I think it's the right decision.
So why would it take, in general, this type of timeline, a year before a ruling would come down on this? Is that typical?
That's longer than one would expect. Mm-hmm. It has truly taken a long time. And, the question, though, becomes why does the circuit attorney's office feel the need to hire outside attorneys? And mm-hmm. Her position on all of these issues has been that she thinks there's a conflict of interest with the city councilor's office, because keep in mind that the city of St. Louis already has its own law firm. It's called they have their own attorney's office, city attorney's office within the city government. So she's felt the need, because of unstated reasons, that there's a conflict of interest. So she's hired all these outside attorneys. And finally, the judge has said no more.
So at this point, she has spent taxpayer money, but moving forward, at least temporarily, she can't do it anymore. Is that the case?
That's correct. Temporary restraining order prevents her from hiring any more attorneys, paying any more outside attorneys, or entering into any additional contracts for outside attorneys. Now, what the court order does not state is how quickly it will move to a full hearing as opposed to a temporary restraining order. We don't know that, but I'll be certainly watching for that news to come out any day.
And I'm wondering, too, how many different cases is she involved in right now, at least on a personal level? Because for a while there were some ideas of things that could be down the pipeline. And it's the weird thing is, we've got a million other things going on in the news. You seem to forget about stuff like this. So could you kind of remind me how many different things she's involved in right now?
Oh, maybe I can keep track. I'm sorry I didn't keep a scorecard here. I should have brought my program. But because there's several. I mean, there's several. In particular, there's the whole issue with regard to William Tisby about whether he perjured himself, and she's been involved with that. There's also issues regarding the racial discrimination lawsuit that she has filed, alleging that there's a conspiracy between the city of St. Louis, the police department, and others, including Charles Lane, who's the plaintiff. He's one of the named defendants in that other lawsuit, alleging a mass conspiracy against her based upon race. There's also her bar complaints that she's been defending. There's several pending bar complaints with the Missouri Bar Association that they're deciding at this point whether to move forward. There have been multiple grand juries that have been formed to investigate potential wrongdoing. The last grand jury, I believe, expired in February, but then the world closed. So I'm not exactly sure what the status on that is in light of the global pandemic. So, you know, she's got as many legal issues going on as President Trump, and so she's been hiring outside counsel, but apparently that will now come to a close.
Yeah, I just, you reminded me of all these things. It's a whirlwind. All of a sudden, you're just reminded of all the different types of things she's juggling right now, and I completely forgot about the lawsuit, which leads me also to believe this is probably, I hate to put it this way, but COVID-19 probably delayed a lot of the discovery issues that she was having issues with and turning documents over, so who knows how much longer this is going to be dragged out because of the way the court system seems to have been closed for the last couple of months.
Yeah, and it has, and frankly, the court system, certainly in Missouri and Illinois and the states where I practice, pretty much everything has been closed except for emergency hearings. If it's not a true emergency, everything is being continued because of the obvious closure of the court system and personnel issues and social distancing and all of those things that have affected the rest of the world. They've also affected the court system. So usually courts do move slowly, and that's a complaint that I hear often. But in this instance, I think it's somewhat justified.
Well, if we look at the Supreme Court yesterday, there was the headlines that the Supreme Court is blocking some documents to be released when it came to some of the grand jury materials with the report. The Mueller report was connected with it as well. And when the Supreme Court normally makes a decision, there's a couple of things they can do. They can kick the can down the road. In this case, I don't know if they're kicking it necessarily. It just seems like they're delaying until maybe a month or two before they actually make a ruling, which sounds to me that they are going to have to make a ruling on this before the election.
It probably will. And here's the issue at play on the national scene here, Ryan, and that's the following. The House of Representatives under Nancy Pelosi has been attempting to get grand jury testimony for the Mueller investigation. Now, as you well know, federal law prohibits the disclosure of grand jury testimony, and there's a very good reason for that. I'll get into that in a moment. But the House of Representatives wanted that grand jury testimony. The House of Representatives in the past has been able to get access to grand jury testimony in conjunction with an impeachment proceeding, which was done under the Nixon administration, also done under the Clinton administration. But in this instance, there is no current pending impeachment proceeding in the House of Representatives, since that was already resolved in the Senate. So the question to the Supreme Court is, does the House of Representatives have the right to access legally protected secret grand jury testimony for an impeachment proceeding that is currently not a proceeding? That's a question that the court has simply never faced before.
That's interesting. And that's why it goes to the Supreme Court, when there's those type of important questions that have never been faced. But if we were to look at, and I don't even know if this plays into the decision making of the Supreme Court, but just knowing what we know with the way information seems to get leaked, we know that the way the FBI handled information, we know during the Obama administration, there was certain information, unmasking of General Flynn. We find that there was a lot of requests to unmask, but the idea that it was being used to float it to the media to perpetuate even further investigations down the line, kind of to circumvent the system in general. Does the Supreme Court even look at the way information has been handled and say, maybe it's best that we don't release this right now?
You know, I don't think that the Supreme Court would really take that into consideration, because what the court is always faced with is two things. First, how do I resolve the current issue? And secondly, how is the way that we decide this issue, how might it affect future courts, future presidents, future interpretation of the Constitution? So in that context, I think the court would want to make a ruling that is consistent maybe with past situations where the House of Representatives has accessed grand jury testimony, and also planning on the fact that this may happen again in the future. And I think they would want to base it on a historical, constitutionally sound principles, rather than, you know, so-and-so can't keep a secret, so we're going to rule against them. So I think they will look at this with a much larger vision than simply the kind of minutia of details that we see in the press every day.
I see. So an instance like maybe the whole reason it got to this point was because of the nonsense that led into it, as sloppy and really inappropriate as may it be, I would almost look at it and say it never should have happened to begin with. So there shouldn't have been something like this to be released in the first place. So it's kind of a moot point. But if the Supreme Court doesn't look at it that way, then I guess it's anything could happen, really, before the election.
It can. And, you know, one other point I want to make on this, Ryan, is that federal law specifies that grand jury testimony is to be maintained and be kept secret for a very good reason. You know, we've all heard the phrase, you can indict a ham sandwich. Mm-hmm. Okay? We've heard that phrase 1,000 times. And the reason why that phrase has meaning is because an indictment is something that's fairly easy to get because the grand jury only hears one side of the testimony. So, for example, if a blind person is saying that Ryan Recker ran a red light, okay, and the person's blind, but you would only know that on cross-examination. Mm-hmm. Well, isn't it true, Mr. Charles, that you are in fact blind and you couldn't see Mr. Recker run the red light? Oh, that's right. Okay, I'm giving a silly example to demonstrate an idea, which is unrebutted testimony is usually inherently one-sided until you hear the cross-examination. Mm-hmm. In an indictment, in a grand jury, rather, that information, there is no cross-examination. You're only hearing one side of the story. So there's a recognition that that's inherently, potentially unreliable. So we're going to keep that secret because that testimony has not been challenged. That's why the information is kept secret. And that's why I'm of the belief that the Supreme Court should maintain that secrecy, because otherwise there could be explosive information that would leak out of the House of Representatives. And it could be only partially true or maybe not true at all.
One more question for you. Brad Young from Hairstyle, Fisher & Young, and totally unrelated to everything we're talking about, but when it comes to movies that depict courtroom activities, where does My Cousin Vinny fall in? Is that somewhat accurate? Is that a nice representation of a courtroom?
You know, I've never heard a judge say, "Counselor, what is a ute?" You know, I've truly never heard that phrase in court before, and nor would I expect to. But I have had many entertaining occurrences in court over the years, but never have I had anything as funny as Joe Pesci in a suit and a bad wig. I have never seen anything that funny in my life in court.
Brad Young from Hairstyle, Fisher & Young, thank you so much. Always coming on and breaking down some of these complex legal issues on Overnight America.
My pleasure, Ryan.
And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
This is Overnight America, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com on KMOX.
We'll be back again tomorrow. And just as a programming note, if you enjoyed the Robert Hyland radio documentary, it's going to be re-aired tomorrow during Charlie Brennan's show. So between 9 and 11 during the day, I think you'll enjoy that. And I think a whole new audience will get a chance to listen to it. I'm pretty excited for that. And we'll be back again tomorrow after the Cardinals baseball radio replay there. But before we end the show, Kevin Kleen has a great new whole nother story. He meets a man polishing his prized pickup truck.
It's the kind of paint job you'd expect on a child's Hot Wheel car, but it's a real truck, a 1981 Chevy with a canary yellow paint job, so shiny and bright you could see it from Earth's orbit. John Brower, the proud owner, was polishing it up with a soft cloth and telling me the sad story of how one time it was stolen from him.
One night I forgot to back it up, put it in the garage, and they stole it.
Who's they?
Whoever stole the truck.
So it was eye candy, and they went for it.
They went for it.
When you saw it was missing, this truck was your baby. How'd you feel?
Oh.
Did you cry?
I was not the happiest man.
I mean, a grown man can cry sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you had put a lot of heart into this truck, and they stole it.
Well, the thing with it was...
Careful, they'll run over you here.
I hear you. I just got it totally finished, running good, and... It was stripped from the front back, so I know a lieutenant colonel down in front of mine. So yeah. He said, well...
It's good to know a lieutenant colonel.
Huh?
It's good to know, Lieutenant Colonel.
So he said, I'm going to send the recovery people down. I said, okay. So they come down and look at it. I said, hey, boys, I want to show you something. There's two diapers and a baby rattle under the seat.
That's a clue.
I said, do I look like the type?
Did they do DNA sampling on the diaper?
Nah, they don't do nothing. So they said they took fingerprints, but whatever. So anyway.
You got it back, though.
It was sitting in front. Police called me at 11 o'clock.
Same day it was stolen?
No, about a week and a half later.
When you got that call, how'd you feel?
I knew right away, you know.
It was going to be stripped.
Oh, yeah. So.
You're buffing it now as if you're petting a dog.
Clean it up. So then.
This truck is your baby.
And all of them are.
They stole it and you got it back.
Well, everybody that has stuff like this.
What'll happen to this car eventually?
Pardon me?
What will happen to this car eventually?
Oh, when something happens to me.
Will it go in a museum?
No. My family's always on my case. What do you need all of them for? I said, when the time comes, burn them, do whatever. What they'll probably do is take them to an auction. Although, you don't know. Maybe these. I was hoping that maybe I got three boys. And I was hoping one of them, you know, the boys would take them to remember Dad. I'd hate to see him sold or whatever, but I won't have to worry about it.
That's John Brower by his beautiful yellow truck. With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
You know, it's funny, Kevin said that at the end. In my mind, when I was trying to envision this truck, I did not envision it yellow. Well, that about does it for us on Overnight America. I want you to keep in mind why we observe Memorial Day for all those brave men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military. We'll be back again later tonight and after Cardinals baseball. Until then, enjoy the rest of your night. Go and like the Ryan Recker Radio Facebook page. All right, we'll see you. We'll see you soon. Good night.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.